The state's fisheries board wrapped up 2 weeks of meetings on Upper Cook Inlet commercial and sports fisheries late last week, and the dust is settling, so to speak, around the various user groups who have stakes in the fisheries. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Today we'll take a look at how the board's decisions on several hundred proposals shake out for the people who depend on Cook Inlet salmon runs for their living and for their dinner tables.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Providence Imaging Center, with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology, provimaging.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Alaska's Board of Fisheries decisions are often contentious, and this session was no exception. Management changes were approved for Kenai River early and late king runs and for the Central District Sockeye Management Plan. We'll be talking about those, but, you know, supporters of recent Board of Fisheries Upper Cook Inlet changes say that the new regulations are expected to allow more salmon, kings and coho specifically, to pass through the inlet into the northern district and into the river drainages of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Those opposed to the changes say that commercial drift netters and set netters will be hurt and that they've suffered a disproportionate hit in fishing time and area. So we'll be talking about that, but first, let's introduce my in-studio guests. Jim Culver is a sitting Matanuska-Susitna Borough Assemblyman. He's vice chairman of the borough's Fish and Wildlife Commission, a small business owner, and he formerly fished in the Prince William Sound salmon drift net fishery. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Dino Sutherland is in studio, and he's a Cook Inlet commercial drift netter and a member of the United Cook Inlet Drift Association, or USIDA, and a TV reality show personality. Hello, Dino.
Good morning.
And standing by on phone, we have from Kenai, Paul Dale, and he's president of the Alaska Salmon Alliance, and that's a group that represents commercial drift netters and set netters, and Mac Menard, also by phone, and he's a Matsu Fish and Wildlife Commission consultant, promises to call in, and he's on the line right now. So let's hear from our guests, and then we will go to the phones. Remember the numbers to call, 1-800-478-TALK or 478-8255, 800-478-8255. And in Anchorage, if you're calling in, 550-8422. And hello to Mac and Paul.
Good morning, Ellen. Thanks for having me on. This is Mac.
Okay, Paul?
Morning, Ellen. Happy to be here.
Okay, great. So let's look at some of the board's major actions. And they, as far as I know, they are pushing the drift fishing fleet south into waters not fished before and limiting drifters from waters off the Kenai to the north, moving drifters to areas near Kenai and the Kasilof Rivers. And so how is this going to affect the drift fleet? Dino, do you want to open up?
Sure. Good morning. Thanks for having us on, and thanks for allowing us to put our side of the story out. The Board of Fish takes up Cook Inlet drift fisheries every 3 years, and we are in the contention that they continually look at us as the reason why the Northern District stocks are not achieving the desired goals. So what the Board of Fish did this year and in the last five board cycles, we go back 15 years where the Cook Inlet drift fleet continues to be restricted more and more and more. It's like death of a thousand paper cuts, but they keep doing this and it's not increasing the production of salmon in the Northern District. So what they did this year is they pushed us farther south earlier, and they put us in an area that has no fish and actually also has some safety issues I can get into later. But our contention that the decisions of this board cycle were made without regard to the science and the facts that we put forward. And we believe the board process may have been, we think it's broken at this point in time.
So we'll get to the broken idea in a little bit here, but how does moving the fleet, the drift fleet, so to speak, from down toward the mouths of the Kenai and Kuseelof rivers and limit, does it limit their fishing time? I've heard it gives them increased area.
You know, the Fish and Game is trying to regulate the Kenai sockeye run, which is a very large run, and there's people in the valley that have the argument that the northern stocks are sacrificed to the management of the Kenai run. Well, this new decision pushes us up against the mouth of the river where we're actually less effective on the Kenai run. Two things happen when we are compressed, when you compress the fleet. One, we actually catch a larger percentage of northern district salmon, cohos, and sockeye when we're compressed. We actually catch 6% of our catches northern district when we're in the open inlet. That percentage drops. Number two, when we're compressed in these corridors, if you will, up against the mouths of the Kenai and Kuseelof River, we're not allowed to intercept the Kenai sockeye run, which allows that run or lets that run go into the river in a very short amount of time. So you look at a run that enters the river in a five-day period as opposed to a two-week period when the drift fleet is allowed to or Fish and Game uses the drift fleet to break those schools up, slow the run down, allow more people time to fish. Last year, there was 850,000 fish entered the Kenai River on a Monday through a Thursday. And then that allowed for all the fish to go through before the dip netters and the personal use and the rod and reel fishermen, they went down there and the fish were gone. And that was because the drift fleet was not Fish and Game. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is not allowed to use the drift fleet to go out there and try to stop that run, break it up, and allow for a more timely return.
And that was this past season, 2013.
Correct.
So you mentioned the corridors. I know that the Matsu Borough and some of the sports supporters pushed for what they're calling conservation corridors to do exactly what you said. Allow more sockeye and more salmon up to the Northern District. Jim Culver, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, ever since statehood, when we pushed for statehood, it was over federal management of our fisheries, that the fish traps have choked off our rivers, our runs were not sustainable. And we're in that situation again in the Northern District of Cook Inlet. We're 50 miles away from the Kenai and Kuseelof rivers. But Cook Inlet, since the 80s, has been primarily managed to harvest the Kuseelof and the Kenai reds and mop up as many as possible. And because of that regulatory regime, the fisheries in the Northern District, the once robust king salmon and the Deshka, the red runs, are decimated. 7 of 11 stocks of concern statewide. That is unsustainable runs, not meeting not enough salmon returning to spawn. And so, you know, we talk about who gets what fish, but basically our Constitution requires us to have sustained yield, and we've got to manage for conservation first. And that's simply what our efforts have been. We have a number of experts that spend their whole 2 weeks at this Board of Fish meeting. Several retired biologists from the Department of Fish and Game, two former Board of Fish members, one former chair, and these folks know their issue. And so we are not opposed to commercial fishing. We just would like to see the fishing done more surgically, scientifically, so that fish make it through the gauntlet in the middle of the inlet. And that's what's driven this debate. So all these issues that Dino brings up were debated and brought forward to the Board of Fish. But the Board of Fish, in their wisdom, 7-0, including the commercial representatives, voted to make some changes because they've heard this cycle after cycle, and we haven't seen any, the ball hasn't moved. And so we need to rearrange our regulatory regime. And I think I'd go to Mac to address some of the specifics that Dino addressed as far as timing and where and composition of the catch and those kinds of things. Mac could speak to that.
Okay, Mac, let's bring you in. You want to follow up what Jim's been saying?
Yeah, sure, Ellen. Thanks very much, and glad to be on with you guys this morning. As Jim said, the efforts on the part of the Mat-Su Borough was not to, in any way wipe out a commercial fishery. There were comments, during the meeting, and I think everybody recognizes that there is a commercial fish priority placed on sockeye salmon, particularly those entering the Kisilof and Kenai rivers, for commercial use. But there's an equal priority for moving coho forward into the Northern District. And so the challenge was, how do we move from a framework that dates back to over 30 years of a large mixed stock fishery and are able to handle large harvests of valuable commercial catch of Kenai and Kisilof sockeye while allowing some additional movement of coho north, and with the hopes of getting some sockeye in. And so it actually isn't a radically new plan. This plan had its start in 2011, and I would view it as more of a refinement to that plan. In 2011, the board made the decision to try to fish the fleet earlier and harder in an effort to get a jump on some of the Kenai-bound and Kisilof-bound salmon. This year they did provide that additional area that Dino mentioned, and I think they called it the anchor point area. And that was principally in response to public testimony that, hey, we drive up from Homer, we really see a lot of fish here, and we'd like to have the opportunity to catch them. That was, I think, a bit of an untested theory, but nevertheless was offered by commercial fishermen, and in deference to that, provided that period or that area there. As they move up into Area 1, the objective there is to be able to fish them early and hard. As they move into what was, they used to call it a corridor, and they really are terminal harvest areas off of the mouths of Kenai and Kisilof. Those were expanded in size, and the intention was to provide an orderly fishery within those areas more proximal to the mouths of Kenai and Kisilof for the purpose of targeting sockeye salmon headed to those rivers. And, the efficacy of that terminal area remains to be seen. But, the ex-vessel value in the drift fishery for the last 3 years has been as high as it's been in the last decade. Their ability to catch sockeye within those terminal areas was demonstrated last year with, as much as a 900,000 fish catch back, I think, 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay, hold on, Mac.
I've got the ability to do some things for us.
I'd like to bring in Paul Dale. Do you have a rebuttal to what Mr. Menard's saying?
Well, I hope so. Paul here. Ellen, during introductions, it wasn't clear. I am president of the Alaska Salmon Alliance. My wife and I also operate a salmon processing company in Kenai and have for 22 years. I will not argue with the intent of Mac Menard or Jim Culver or the Northern District folks who wish to improve their sport fish opportunities. The commercial fish industry in Cook Inlet recognizes the problems in the Mat-Su area and, frankly, wants to be a participant in improving those circumstances. The issue I think we're dealing with at this board cycle is what's been implemented, I think, can only be called a bold experiment. And the implications of that experiment, should it not work out, I don't think were fully contemplated or addressed by the board. The managing fish stocks in Cook Inlet is always about trading, and the trades need to be evaluated very carefully.
Okay. It's looking like, though, as far as I know, there's a higher sockeye run predicted in Cook Inlet this year. So maybe this move will work out. Maybe it won't. Like you said, it's an experiment and for 3 years, right? This would be the decision would be good for 3 years.
Well, you're right, Alan. It is an experiment for 3 years. And the concern of the commercial fish industry in Cook Inlet is if we've collectively made a decision that fails to allow for the commercial harvest of sockeye salmon at levels that would sustain the sockeye run in a vibrant way. We have to remember Cook Inlet sockeye, Kosilof and Kenai sockeye are the species and runs that most Alaskans depend on.
Okay.
From dip netters, commercial fishermen, and in-river, Kenai River sport fishers.
Sorry to cut you off there. You are listening to Talk of Alaska. If you'd like to call in and ask any of these gentlemen about the Board of Fisheries Upper Cook Inlet decisions of last week and the week before, call in 1-800-478-8255. That's again 800-478-8255. That's 800-478-TALK. If you're calling in from Anchorage, please call 550-8422, 550-8422. So I'm getting a lot of feedback from this last 2 weeks of board deliberations. A publication called seafood.com, it's an online publication, says, quote, "The Alaska Board of Fish failed to stand up to the recreational lobby and ended their session on Cook Inlet salmon by taking measures to penalize commercial sockeye fishing while doing nothing about changing regulations on sport and dip net fishing." So, according to seafood.com, much of the problem for salmon come from in-river pressure, that would be sports fishers, I take it, which has grown enormously over the past decade in the high population areas. Dino, you want to address that?
Sure. And I want to echo what Paul had mentioned in his talk there, that we want to work in conjunction with the folks in the Mat-Su. You know, I live in Eagle River. I fish and cook in it, but I'm pretty close to the valley. And these common issues address those in-river problems that we have in the valley. Let me back up a bit. We don't have a return problem in the Northern District. What we have is a production problem. 95% of all coho destined for the Northern District make it there, okay? And so what we have is we have a habitat problem in the valley that we're willing to address. We also would like to bring enhancement to the table. We have an Eklutna hatchery that's sitting idle, and it just needs funding. We can enhance. We're offering to enhance the runs. We're also offering to help the eradication of the pike. The pike in the Northern District is an invasive species. The definition of an invasive species is one male and one female, and they are not below the Alaska Range. Pike are not there. They are probably responsible for the destruction of 75% of the salmon habitat up there. We also have other habitat issues, such as four-wheeling through streams. We have a lot of culvert issues. Now, I know that the state has granted the Mat-Su Borough and the Fish and Game about $8 million last year to help with those habitat issues. We want to jump in there and help use that money. We don't know where that money has gone so far. It was granted about 9-10 months ago. We do know maybe some of it was used for paid testimony at the board, but we want to be able to help.
Let me retract that.
We want to help with that in-river habitat. You know, we understand and we want to help, and we're at the table to help bring a better place for the salmon to rear. And so,
okay. Jim, you want to respond to what the borough's been doing on
the borough
habitat.
So our efforts are totally funded, our advocacy efforts totally funded by borough taxpayers. And the money that was appropriated in the last legislative session, with the great help of Senator Mike Dunleavy and Representative Bill Stoltz, who chair the respective budget subcommittees for Fish and Game, targeted funds towards the department to do genetic research so we can have baseline information on what the stocks that are being caught in the inlet and what their stream of origin are. That is simply what the money's going for. And also enhancement in the Clutha area, some king salmon, and also in Willow. But I think I need to, if you just give me a moment to talk about habitat. So that was basically the whole red herring at the Board of Fish meeting, was that, you know, most of the proposals that were punitive, in other words, to take away opportunity for Alaskans, were sponsored by the Drift Trade Group out of Cook Inlet, or members, and to reduce bag limit, take away opportunity, close down personal use dip netting. Our group simply had conservation measures. Nothing, no increase in bag limits, no increase in time, no increase of supply. We simply want to restore the native runs in the upper Cook Inlet. So, but not only that, but we have to push back on allowing Alaskans to have opportunity and access to the resource, because we depend on that for food. But as far as habitat goes, the Mat-Su Burrow has received two national awards for conservation for our culvert installation program. When a road is upgraded, and mainly in like the Palmer-Wasilla area, we put in a fish-friendly culvert, and we've won two national awards for that. But there are no culverts over in the grounds where the fish rearing areas are, the tributaries. It's mainly wetlands of the Susitna River. There's bridges. There's a bridge across the Susitna. There's a bridge across the Little Sioux. The habitat areas are not impacted by culverts and traffic. There just simply isn't aren't the people out there. With regard to pike, Fish and Game has had an aggressive pike eradication program. Over 12,000 were netted out of Alexander Creek. Alexander Creek is where the pike are in those systems. There's two lakes in Alexander that have had pike impacts that the department is making a lot of headway on, because that is a slow-moving system. The other ones are fast water. Pike is not the same issue there. So we would rebut that habitat and pike are the problem. The problem is, and the state board identified that several cycles ago, not enough fish are returning to perpetuate the runs, and that is the mission. Let's get the runs restored, float all boats. There'll be more fish for the fleet to catch, and we'll have some in river, so our lodges, our businesses that depend on gas stations, restaurants that depend on providing opportunity and running a small business, have fish in the rivers.
Okay, thanks, Jim. We're going to go to the phones in just a minute here. You are listening to Talk of Alaska. If you'd like to call in and comment about Upper Cook Inlet salmon management changes, call 1-800-478-8255, 1-478-TALK, or in Anchorage, call 550-8422. Let's go to Matt in Dillingham. Ah, we just lost him. Sorry, Matt in Dillingham. Is he there? Let's go to Matt in Dillingham then. He's got a sports fish comment. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I just kind of like to add to what they're talking about right now. There's a reason why we don't disturb nesting bird colonies, caribou calving grounds, walrus haulouts, et cetera. And I think that should apply to salmon spawning grounds. So, yep, that's it.
Well, thanks for calling in. Actually, there was a fellow who had some interesting proposals at the board who did call for additional protections for salmon spawning grounds, and I don't know what happened to that proposal. Let's hear some throat clearing out there. Let's bring in Paul Dale again. Paul, do you have something to say on this habitat issue?
Certainly. Well, I'd like to move the conversation, if we could, from the Northern District habitat concerns to in-river habitat concerns, and from my perspective, back to the lack of integration of the major decisions taken at this year's Board of Fish meetings. I described the conservation corridor, as the Mat-Su folks like to call it, as quite a bold experiment. My problem with the experiment, I think the industry's concern with the experiment, is if it doesn't work well. And the board failed to adopt a plan B, we might say. In addition, this experiment to pass more fish to the Northern District is occurring on a high sockeye forecast year,
It's also occurring on a year with extremely low Kenai River Chinook abundance numbers. So it's almost looking like a perfect storm for bad outcomes. And I think we need to look at the decisions in a more integrated manner than the board has been able to. There were some small Kenai River habitat proposals adopted by the board. Two of them expanded sanctuary areas that addressed the caller's concern. One of them addressed a slot limit, which ought to increase the number of early run Chinooks, a return in Cook Inlet that's extremely distressed. So it's not true that there were no habitat issues addressed. However, I think the industry's view is they were relatively small adjustments, while the allocation adjustments were quite large.
Okay, 1-800-478-TALK, 1-800-478-8255. Let's go back to the phones. Bill in Kenai, please.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Hey, I got a couple of comments here. You know, sometimes when stuff gets said, it can have a spin on it, whether the speaker intends for it or not. But I heard one of the gentlemen from the Valley talking about a plan that dates back 30 years. Well, that's just not accurate, because that plan has been modified any number of times. And back during the Knowles administration, when Larry Engel through Dan Coffey were board chair, they modified that plan and put us into corridors regulated by statute, as opposed to just when the biologists figured that the run dictated that that would be an advantage. So that's a change to the plan. Another guy suggested that the fleet's doing real good and they're doing the best that they've been doing for a while now. Well, he doesn't mention that between 1998 and about 2004, permits dropped to as low as 12,000 to 16,000. And I've been drifting out there for over 40 years, and I had two seasons where I grossed under $20,000. So let's put things into perspective. Craig Medred just had an article where he said permits were now worth up to $100,000. That's categorically false. Maximum value right now is $85, $85,000, and they're predicted to go down. Another thing that I hear from the Northern District, he talks about the organization, the commercial organization, I'm sure he's referring to USDA, introducing all these proposals to do this and do that. And then he says that the Northern District is simply trying to da-da-da. Well, simply implies that those are the good guys and we're the bad guys. Now, I think that you would be hard-pressed to find any USDA member that would suggest that we try to eliminate the dip net fishery. Sometimes you put a proposal in to draw a highlight to an issue that's creating a problem. That dip net fishery is not going anywhere, in my humble estimation.
Okay.
But it does not dismiss the fact that it was created on a fully utilized fishery. So there are some questions, possibly some legal questions, on whether that was appropriate. So it might be it might be time to go back and look at that and try to put some sideboards on that.
Okay.
There are no sideboards.
Thank you, Bill.
Again, when I hear guys talk from the Northern District,
okay,
they talk about the fleet intercepting their fish and the fleet doing this and the fleet doing that. But you rarely hear the Northern District address problems in the Northern District and admit that they're problems. They say pike isn't a problem.
Okay, let's give somebody else a chance, Matt. Bill, I really appreciate your calling in. I was going to ask, isn't that what the Board of Fish does, though? Every 3 years, they take another look at the management, and they revise it for good or for evil, or for different gear groups will have different spins on what exactly those revisions will mean for them. So you're listening to Talk of Alaska statewide, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. You can email us too, talk@alaskapublic.org.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. Whether it has to do with fishing, food, or fun, every Alaskan has a story about their connection with wild salmon. And you're invited to hear some of those stories. Introducing Salmon Voices, a new series from the Salmon Project. It features Alaska authors, photographers, and illustrators sharing their experiences with Alaska's most famed fish. New stories will be published each day, February 2nd through the 16th, on AlaskaDispatch.com. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Hello, you're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer, and we're discussing the Board of Fish Upper Cook Inlet Salmon Management Changes. And if you'd like to call in, the number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK in Anchorage. Please dial 550-8422. So we wanted to. Dino is jumping out of his seat.
Right? Oh, I just wanted to kind of change the subject here just a little bit. You know, we can get mired in, and there's a lot of emotions, and we saw that for the 2 weeks of testimony, and the board decisions are done. And as my friend Paul Dale points out, it is an experiment. But I want to bring up the fact that this new corridor that was created, and it was a board-generated proposal, which, and it didn't have the public testimony or the vetting, you know, it that's another discussion. But this new Anchor Point corridor, now that is not a biological corridor, it's a mandated board proposal corridor. It will put the fleet, and my point here is safety, it's going to put 400 drift boats right on top of the troll of the sport boat fishing fleet there off Deep Creek, Nanilchik River, and Anchor Point. That's a huge fishery where the tractors, they launch the boats and they troll for the king salmon, and that's huge in June and July. Well, this new Anchor Point corridor, this experiment in this Anchor Point corridor is going to compress 400 boats on there, and unfortunately, we're all professional mariners and we're going to do our best, but I see some gear conflict there, and this I don't think was thought out very well, and I hope Fishing Game, the board gives the Fishing Game the leeway to not keep us in there, because I see some serious safety issues here.
Jim would like to respond, then I'd like to go to the phones again.
Well, actually, that sounds like there's a bit of a split between the fleet there, because it was generated from the Homer boats, the Chamber of Commerce, the city of Homer. They would like to see fish go across their docks, utilize their services and their processors, and so their fleet can access their harbor. There was a lot of testimony on the public record before the meeting, during the meeting, about not having everything move far north so that Homer would be left out of the economic chain. And I think the board listened to that. And so again, that's another one of these issues where we'll see what happens. We can't be afraid of change. We need to do fishing surgically, scientifically, and work together as Alaskans, and we've created the best fisheries management process in the world. And so, you know, we're not in here wrestling in your studio. We're debating our topics. We're hearing from Alaskans. As Alaskans, we come together, and that's why we formed our state. It was all about fish.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
Jim and I just took a selfie together,
they're smiling now. Let's go to the phones, 478-TALK. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Let's go to Matt in Sitka, please. Hello,
well,
Matt.
Hi. Good morning. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that much of the king salmon and to some extent the coho issues are not just Cook Inlet issues. They're Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea issues. There's something going on, and much of the Cook Inlet issues have to do with water quality and habitat. So, as they do everywhere where salmon are threatened or there is a problem with salmon resource. But I want to ask the commercial guys. I'm a commercial guy down here in Southeast, but can you tell me in just, you know, a 100 words or something like that, exactly what the problem is. You've lost major time, you've lost major area, and it's not going to solve the problem. Why? You've gotten into it better since, but at the beginning, I wasn't following the argument. So,
sure,
go ahead, Dina.
Sure. During the beginning of the show, I did express the fact that during the past five board cycles, or board cycles, I don't think the public realizes that the United Cook or the Cook Inlet Drift Fleet has lost about 80% of its fishing time in the past 20 years. And it keeps, it's death by 1,000 paper cuts. And when we're not really looking at the real issues of production, we have returns. Yeah, and you're right. There is some high seas problems that have been addressed by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. And I think we're on the right track there. But
yeah. Okay, Jim's got another word, and then let's go to some more comments.
Well, I'd kind of like to, we have adopted plans, but either through lawsuits, the drifters have sued to stop implementation of the plan in 2012. EO authority override, there's a trigger if more than 4.3 million salmon or sockeye are forecast. The department has EO authority to throw out the rules. Those are some of the problems we've had with the current regime prior to this board cycle. And so that's what we're trying to address. Now, when you talk about economic hardship and conservation, the lowest number of angler days in 37 years was 2012. It's been closure after closure after closure in almost every fishery. So we're at a point where we have to do something. It's not whether we'd like to make, taking anybody's allocation of salmon away. It's we've got to do something for the resource. And that's what we're all working towards.
Okay. And earlier was mentioned that northern pike are a problem for Matsu salmon. Let's go to the phones. George in Ninilchik. He wants to talk about that. George, yeah. You there?
Yep, I'm here. Thank
Hello.
You. Yeah, I just wanted to put out a few things. There's a lot of propaganda going on here. On the stocks of concerns, it was mentioned there were seven kings and one sockeye of concern. The kings, there hadn't been a commercial drift fishery on those for over 50 years, so that's strictly pretty much a sports fishery. And the sockeye, it was determined as yield concern because the yield was down, which was actually caused by restrictions put on the drift fleet. And the department said at the board meeting that they were making escape of goals and even overescaping some of those systems. On the pike issue, there's over 135 lakes up in the valley that have pike in them. And the department's been working on Alexander Creek, and that's basically the only one. Aquaculture has been working on some of the others, so 135 lakes or systems up there. It's pretty alarming. And another fact that was brought up is the drift fleet actually lets 95% of the coho up into the northern district in the Matsu Valley, and 90% of the sockeye. And as far as the experiment, the drift fleet's actually been in these corridor fisheries since the late 90s, and it hasn't worked. It's proven that it doesn't work.
Okay, so you're saying the corridor idea does not work, but it's it's now in the plan. Mac Minard, you got anything to say about that?
Well, yeah, and that's Dave Martin, I think.
Thanks, George.
Central Peninsula AC, and I appreciate Dave's comments there. The board heard that and I guess rejected the basis of that, the notion that a large geographic area, I've heard someone describe it as large as the size of Scotland, it can simply be written off because there are pike in it, just didn't set well with them. And they said, no, we've got to do something. And doing something wasn't intended to extirpate the commercial fishery. It's indeed intended to allow them to perform a very important part of the economic fabric here. So, you know, the goal is to fish them early. The goal is to fish them as close to their terminal area as they can reasonably be. The goal is to provide a conservation quarter north. We had one period where we took 53,000 coho and 6,000 sockeye in what was supposed to be a sockeye-directed fishery. So the expectation is that as we move into the latter part of July, that these restrictions come into place, they place them into more terminal areas and allow the passage of those fish north. I'm not sure where the numbers of 90% of the sockeye actually, or coho actually come from. Nobody knows how many coho there are in the system to begin with, but I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah.
I hope he's right. It'd be good if he was right.
Okay, hang on a minute.
That hasn't been allowing us.
Okay, hold on.
Can I comment on that?
That's Paul. Go ahead, and I want to read a couple of emails that just came in on that same subject. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I appreciate Mac Menard's comments. You know, he is a hired biologists to support the Northern District's interest in passing more salmon north. As I said, the commercial fish industry wants to help the Mat-Su Valley area with fish returns. We just cannot take it on any schedule, particularly a schedule that calls into question the ability to harvest the significant, very significant sockeye returns to the Kenai and the Kisilov River. Mac mentioned an unfortunate opening a year ago that resulted in a very high coho harvest relative to sockeyes. It's fairly common knowledge that opening occurred because of high-level political interference with local practical management. In other words, the Driftleet was put in a small area that everyone knew better except some high-level political people that wanted to try it. It was an experiment gone bad.
Okay, hold that thought. We don't want to be pointing fingers here. I want to read Christy Fry has emailed. She said she heard Dino explain the fishing the fleet every day in the corridor causes an increase in the number of Mat-Su fish. She says it is a fact, one provided by Alaska Fish and Game. It takes 10 days fishing the corridor to catch as much as one day fishing inlet wide. Dino, would you agree to that?
That's true. And when we're putting the corridors near the mouth of the rivers, two things happen. One, the fish sound, so we're not that effective, and so our catch rate goes way down. And what happens there is the Northern District schools will swing in there. And so to try to stop the Kenai and Kisilov runs, we're in the corridors day after day after day, but we're not catching the fish that go to the Kenai, but we're intercepting more Northern District salmon. And that's a fact. That's the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has proven that. But that it falls on deaf ears. If you put us in the corridor, we're going to catch more of your fish. If you let us out in the inlet, we're going to catch less of your fish. And that's science, but we're working on headline biology. What's printed in the Anchorage Daily News and what goes out on Channel 2 is what people believe.
Okay, sorry to hear that. Let's go to the phones. The call board is lighting up. Dennis in Clam Gulch wants to talk about taking pressure off fish. Dennis, hi.
Hi, Alan.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking
my
call.
What's your idea?
I see the contention just is never going to go away, is it?
No.
I just wanted to share with you, we talked before, they considered my proposals to try to take pressure off of spawning Chinooks in the Kenai, and it just baffles me how the department seems to fail to take advocacy for these fish and allow the in-river fishery to continue unabated on fish that are obviously in decline, and I think in over the next few years we're going to wind up with a closure completely of that fishery for the Chinooks, possibly this year on the early run for sure, what they call the early run, and next year on the late run, and it brings me to the point of what I think is a mismanagement approach by the department to approach the rivers temporarily, dividing a resource into an arbitrary date of July 1, but that. The fact of the matter is there's a large main stem component, and recent studies show that that the tributary components are available for harvest in the same area below the Soldotna Bridge, and the department fails to advocate for the fish, protecting the fish below the bridge, and the board also chose to take no action to just reduce the stress upon the fish to try to give them some some relief from all of the boat pressure, all the angling pressure.
Okay.
Lack of compassion that I see for the fish in this process is astounding to me.
So you think the fish ought to be a little more nurtured, pampered, and let the fish have a couple of days off from trying to escape those nets. Thanks for calling, Dennis. Let's go to Bruce in Eagle River. Bruce, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What's up on your mind?
Well, what I would like to know is that why not stock coho salmon in the road accessible streams that are up in the Mattsu Valley? That would provide local opportunity for the local anglers there at a relatively cheap cost. But it seems like from the discussion that the leadership of the valley there is either reluctant or unable to take action on that. And I would like to know why.
Okay, Jim, you want to answer that? Thanks, Bruce.
Well, why didn't we just stock streams at statehood after the fish traps decimated our runs? Because we need to take measures to conserve these stocks for future generations. Stocking is expensive. We have to get these streams back to their wild condition, and that's a responsibility we have as Alaskans, to simply make more fish that may end up in a net and not even make it back to spawn. How is that moving the ball forward? So, you know, stocking may be a valuable tool to use, and, you know, we do it with the pink fishery and a number of things. But we have great systems up there, and we simply need to allow time, 5-7 years, to rebuild those stocks, and they will come back. We've proven that. Look what's happening in the Columbia systems in Oregon and Washington. We can't just write them off and give up. We need to think about future generations and future salmon runs. That, you know, if we're not doing a good job of stewardship, we need to change. And that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jim. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. Our call-in number is 1-800-478-TALK, 1-800-478-8255, or in Anchorage, 550-8422. We'll talk some more after this break.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. There's a good feeling you get when you give, and each year more Alaskans are supporting things they love when they file online for their PFD. Alaskans like you donated $2.5 million last year to strengthen education, help families in need of food and shelter, and protect the most vulnerable among us. You even shared your permanent fund dividends with public radio to keep quality programming alive and well. This year, the PFD is expected to be a lot bigger. So come on, love Alaska. Pick, click, give. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Welcome back. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer. We're talking about the Upper Cook Inlet salmon management changes. And let's take a call from Tom in Homer. He's talking about clean water. Tom, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I think we really have to focus on keeping our oceans clean and where fish can live. And to do that, we got to guard against nuclear pollution that's coming like from Japan or anywhere in the 500 other power plants around the world that are nuclear. We should be asking our governments, what are they doing to protect these power plants? And also, what we should be asking the oil companies, what are they doing to protect their water when they're fracking, using fracking and destroying the water?
Okay, Tom, thanks. I appreciate your calling in. We want to stick to, I think, salmon. I know it's all related, but right now we're in the middle of Board of Fish proposals, and I would agree. You've got to let your government know about clean water, fracking, and the potential debris from the Japan earthquake of 2 years ago. So let's get back to, I want to talk a little bit about, we're not talking about the set netters, and I want to talk about the pressure on the salmon resources that many say are posed by urbanization, the growing population of the Cook Inlet area, Anchorage, the Mat-Su, and of course the burgeoning number of sports fishers, dip netters, personal use fisheries. Dino, you want to say something about that?
Actually, I think Paul, I would defer this subject to Paul.
Okay, Paul, standing by?
Yeah, thank you, Ellen. I'm glad you got to this part of it, because many of us in the industry really think there's been entirely too little focus on it. You know, the sockeye salmon are the returns that seem to be doing quite well in Cook Inlet, and that's partly because their rearing areas are all in federally carefully managed large lake systems, both the Kenai and the Kasilof. If those fish reared in lakes that look like the Kenai River does today, I doubt we would have the vibrant sockeye fishery that we have. So urbanization and in-river, highly commercialized in-river fishing, many of us feel needs to be addressed, and it is not getting, it's getting lip service, not real service.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a publication the borough put out called Juno, We Have a Problem, that was informational from the borough's side on some of the fisheries issues. The borough did state that the borough has 150,000 sport and 35,000 personal use households that fish for salmon in Upper Cook Inlet. And they're, of course, comparing that with about 1,300 commercial salmon gillnet permits registered in the inlet. And that argument was to maybe give more fish to the sport person and personal use fisheries. But, Jim, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a very important industry. And, you know, as Cook Inlet's in transition, you know, we have the large population and access to the resource. And there's been quite a few gains in the sockeye population, you know, the 60s and 70s. When statehood came around, there wasn't very many fish in Cook Inlet. In the 70s, it improved. The 80s was the heyday. We've done a good job managing our fisheries, and the state Department of Fish and Game and the Board of Fisheries are doing a great job. There's a lawsuit out there to return Cook Inlet to federal management. We're opposed to bringing the feds in. We think we can handle this locally. You know, when we talk about these type of fisheries management regimes, this isn't new, what we're proposing to fish close to the shore instead of out in the middle of the inlet. That's how Bristol Bay is fished. They fish in individual districts at river mouths, and they don't do a targeted middle of the inlet intercept fishery. And that's simply what we're trying to do, is get fish into the streams so the anglers can catch them, so these lodges can exist, so that we share the resource rather than have one group or the other. It's important to rebuild these runs. And that, I think, will all benefit the commercial fishery as well as the in-river users.
Okay, hold that thought. I want to go to Stu in Anchorage, Muldoon. He's been holding on a long time. Stu, what have you got to say about the loss of Richard Lake fish?
Thanks for taking my call. Red Shirt Lake, pike infestation, salmon runs totally gone. Would it be possible to at least see some kind of plan in the works on how we could try to get at least some salmon back to some of these totally decimated runs that used to be really vibrant? I took a canoe down from Red Shirt to Flathorn a couple of years ago, and beaver dams, deadfall, absolutely nothing, not even pike. It seems like maybe the creek went pretty dry at one time, and this summer the drought, that creek went almost totally dry for a very short time, and then it flooded because it rained like heck after a while. But boy, some kind of plan in the works. Locals at Red Shirt Lake have told me that they've seen changes, and it might be due to the salmon not coming
okay.
back for so long.
Adino's shaking his head. He wants to jump in here.
I agree, and that's a great point. And we do need a plan, and actually we've brought forward these plans, and again, they've fallen on deaf ears. And this plan that we've brought forward includes helping with habitat restoration, helping get rid of the pike infestation, helping with enhancement, and just to point out about the funding of enhancement, Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association, which runs the hatcheries, is funded by the Drift Fleet. Okay, we pay for that, so there's not a problem. If the Northern District wants enhancement, we're here, we're ready to pay for it. So we do have a plan. We want to work in tandem with our friends in the Mat Valley. We don't want to argue. Let's get together, put this plan on the table that we've proposed, and let's agree on our common issues and our common enemies of the salmon, and let's move forward.
Okay, thanks, Dino. We don't have a whole lot of time. I want to take a couple more calls, and then we will wrap it up. We didn't really get to set netters too much, but I want to talk about them a little bit. Let's go to Cindy in Big Lake, former fishing guide.
Hi.
Hi, Cindy.
My name is Cindy Bettini, and I'm from the Big Lake area, and I'd just like to say that I applaud the Natsu Borough for funding the issue of getting more sports fishermen some fish. And back in the 80s, my husband and I were fishing guides in the Susitna Drainage, primarily the Deshka, and we saw the salmon going. The state kept reducing the escapement requirements, and we still weren't able to get the escapement. Eventually, we had to close our business because the rivers were closed to salmon fishing. And I think that's pretty much what's going on right now, several decades later. So I'm hoping that we can, in fact, look at all these other issues that have been mentioned by the commercial fishermen, like the pike. I heard four-reelers going through rivers. I don't think that affected the runs that we were fishing, but maybe they do in the Kinnick River area.
Okay, thanks for calling, Cindy. We've only got about 40 seconds left. Dino, Jim, you got real quick something to say?
In the pike issue, it's kind of like a political campaign. Repeated it often enough and people will believe it. The department has had an aggressive campaign on the pike, and it's mainly the one system. There's a couple of lakes, but we just can't give up on it. They've caught over 12,000 pike. You know, we've got to get more fish in there. We've got to keep working on the pike, but it's not an area-wide issue. It's not in every lake and every, system as they would have you believe. And then, you know, I guess I would contrast that with, we have to say we have habitat issues with culverts. There's no culverts over in these rearing areas.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Dino, real quick.
I just want to thank everybody for chiming in and paying attention, and just want to make sure that we all sit at the table, work on our common issues. Let's work this out, and let's not every 3 years look to the Drift Fleet. And that's what happens. We're standing in the corner every 3 years waiting to get our livelihoods taken away. But anyway, let's work together.
Thanks, Dino, Jim, Paul, and Mick. Mike, thanks. Talk Alaska is statewide, and we have Steve Heimel will be back next week. Our engineers, Dave Waldron, and Lori Townsend answered the phones. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.